Like to call to order the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Good afternoon, everyone.
I agree.
We have a couple of bills today. It's a big day here, this session, because we're actually going to cast some votes. Before we get to those bills, I would like to bring up some teachers here, the Distinguished Educators Council, an independent group of educators and professionals, and they were asked and commissioned by the Chalkboard Project to make some recommendations on education, how to improve the quality of teaching and learning. And there's 13 teachers from all over Oregon, all of whom have been recognized for their professional ability. We have some of them with us today. They're going to come forward and make a short presentation. So, welcome. I guess we'd be interested in what you're up to and how things are going, how long you've been this group, and where we're all headed, and what advice you have for us boys up here.
Great. Well, my name is Sean McGinney, and I am a third and fourth grade teacher in the Lebanon School District at a school called Hamilton Creek, and I am one of the 13 members of Chalkboard's Distinguished Educator Council. And Chair Haas and members of the House Committee, thank you for inviting us to introduce our report to you today. We were assembled by Chalkboard last spring and worked through the summer, where the team came together about once a month between the 13 of us. And we worked all day, tirelessly, from early until very late, usually later than what we planned to be on these issues. And we really wrestled with how to make Oregon a great place to teach. That was our goal, and that is kind of the subtitle of our report. And so we really boiled it down to five big things that have made our report. And we really worked together as a consensus model to really develop this vision for the state and working from that model. And we really had some great discussions, and we've even already had discussions about getting back together again very soon, like next summer, and talking about even more issues, because we, as a council, acknowledge that those are five things that are in that report, but those aren't the only five things that we could continue to work on together collaboratively to make teaching a better place. In our vision, teachers are well developed by being prepared, provided with meaningful ongoing evaluations, provided with personalized learning opportunities, and continuously expanding their skills, recognizing their leadership, and given tools and support to meet the needs of their diverse students. We believe that if we can support teachers from beginning to the end of their careers, not only will every teacher become better at their craft, but then that will benefit every student as well. Our recommendation focuses on all the phases. Supporting great teachers isn't just about training the new teachers and then leaving them isolated in their classrooms. It's about supporting teachers means taking them from pre-service through initial orientation, through those early years, to how do we continue to advance 15, 20, 30 years through the evolution of a career. Many of our classrooms do look different than they did 10 or 5 years ago. We have more students in poverty, more ethnic diversity, and more English language learners. Our recommendations are focused on supporting great teaching so that we can support all students. To my left is my colleague Kelly from David Douglas, and she will speak more specifically about the recommendations.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, I'm Kelly Devlin, and I am currently the K-12 English as a Second Language Coordinator for the David Douglas School District in Southeast Portland. If you haven't already, we hope that you will take the time to read our DEC report, our DEC report. And for each of the five recommendations that we have in our report, the Council has made some specific policy and implementation suggestions. And we really looked and explored at research-based ideas, and we added on our own classroom experiences that we all had as classroom teachers. As you look through the report and you read, you'll notice that some of these recommendations may seem very obvious to you, but you may be surprised that some of these things are actually still not the norm in some of our Oregon schools or districts. We ask that you the Senate Committee, and your colleagues in the legislature provide leadership around these issues that we have brought forward, and where possible, demonstrate some state-level commitment in supporting great teaching here in the state of Oregon. You'll be hearing shortly about legislation focusing around mentoring and professional development, and those are two core recommendations in our report. We've addressed both of these issues and believe that both high-quality mentoring is essential and relevant individualized professional development should be provided to every teacher in the state of Oregon. So very briefly, I'm going to give you an overview of the five Distinguished Educators Council recommendations, and then both Sean and I would be happy to take any questions that you may have. So recommendation number one is to emphasize the clinical classroom experience and effective mentors in our teacher preparation programs. Currently, too much of our teacher preparation experience, the student teaching experience, is kind of sometimes left up to chance. Who wants a student teacher? You might get an email. Anybody up for having a student teacher this fall? And are we really channeling and making sure that we're having the highest level of mentoring and collaborating going on between a student teacher and a master teacher in the classroom, or are we leaving that up to chance? We want to make sure that both the school districts and the universities around the state collaborate to ensure that these clinical practices are meaningful and high quality. Recommendation number two is to provide meaningful ongoing evaluations of teachers. And that is really at the forefront these days with Senate Bill 290 being created throughout the state. The DEC believes that evaluation is not a process of deciding who are our good teachers versus who are our bad teachers. Our evaluation process should really be looking at the learning process and the lifelong learning process of a teacher that deeply engages all educators, whether it's the principal, a mentor teacher, and the classroom teacher, to collaboratively help each other grow in their skills and their knowledge base and then actual implementation of instruction in the classroom. This will require a lot of well-trained evaluators in our system, and we need to make sure that our evaluations then are connected to meaningful professional development so that we can grow and improve. Recommendation number three is to ensure personalized professional learning opportunities that are tailored to teachers' needs and the students that they teach. Unfortunately, historically, what's been deemed as professional development has had very little impact on the actual teaching that's going on in classrooms. So we spend a lot of money on workshops and training, but are we really getting our bang for our buck when it comes down to the classroom setting? Are we really implementing those research-based strategies? Is that really making a positive impact on student achievement? And so we highlight that mentoring for new teachers as one of the professional development strategies that has shown great results. I can't imagine being a new teacher and being thrown into a classroom these days and have no support. But I also can't imagine being a teacher. I have a friend who has gone back to the classroom after being a teacher on special assignment for 8 years with our curriculum department. She's teaching third grade again, and she looks at me every day and she said, I need a mentor. I need someone here to support me because the classroom has changed in the demands of what she's teaching from when she left to be a TOSA 8 years ago. So mentoring is essential. It's vital when you're a new teacher, but it doesn't mean because you're an experienced teacher, you don't need a mentor in your classroom either. Recommendation number four is to establish new leadership opportunities for effective teachers. So many of us that are, quote, we get a label, active teachers, great leaders in our buildings. We want to take more responsibility. We like leadership roles. But oftentimes, the only avenue to advance in our career is to leave the classroom and become an administrator. And so you're taking away from our classrooms some of our best teachers into a different position where they might not have direct impact on students. If you look at our Distinguished Educators Council, there's 13 of us, and two-thirds of us hold an administrative licensure. But we don't feel like we can leave the classroom because we still want to make an impact on students. So we are trying to look for great ways for teachers to look at different career pathways to share their skills and knowledge without fully leaving the classroom. I think it will not only benefit teachers to expand their knowledge base and their leadership skills, but it would still be extremely beneficial for our students as well. Our last recommendation in this report is recommendation number 5, and it is to ensure that Oregon's teachers can meet the needs of our diverse students. You know, as Sean mentioned, the needs of our students continue to grow and shift. In David Douglas, over the last 15, 20 years, the number of English language learners in our district, the number of high free and reduced lunch kids in our schools, the demographics have changed completely. And we really need to be proactive on how we're going to meet those needs of all of those diverse kids. We have to access ongoing training for our teachers, and we have to be able to support them in how to implement promising practices that have been proven successful maybe in other schools or other districts. So in a nutshell, that was my quick overview of what you would see and read in the report. We hope this report will help shape your vision on what teaching and learning can look like in Oregon. We also hope that you will call upon other teachers to add their voices to our policy conversations. Our experiences as classroom teachers can help shape public policy, and we want to make sure it not only works for teachers, but that it works for students as well. They are why we are all here. Sean and I, as well as our 11 other DEC colleagues, would be happy to serve as a sounding board with any questions that you may have or clarifications on what our classroom experiences are like on a day-to-day basis. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for these recommendations, and thanks for your volunteer efforts and working on this council. We'll let this soak in for a while. I would just comment on your fourth recommendation, teachers as leaders. I tend to see teachers as leaders anyway in our society, just by virtue of the fact that they chose this very noble profession. I think you too are leaders by coming down here. And you mentioned getting your administrative license, and about half of you have that, and that's what you need to get to become a principal or move forward. But without that, what else do you see as ways that teachers can become leaders within their profession? Is this a matter of incentives? Is it compensation? Is it what?
You go ahead and I'll.
I don't think it's a matter of money, considering we as educators don't jump into this field to make money necessarily. We're there for the kids and the learning and the relationships. So I think it's about opportunities, and sometimes it's about roles and responsibilities that maybe either are legally responsible to or just traditionally have always been a principal's role. And I think teachers could, I think one of the things we're evolving as colleagues is with professional learning communities is learning to collaborate more, but then also realizing that even as I have my strengths, I have things I still need to work on, and I can learn from someone who has those strengths. But to open those doors and to have that coaching, I mean, it's just hard right now. We're strapped, and, you know, we're all hands on deck. So I think being able to release people and move people around at times would be excellent, and I think just some outside the box of, well, just because we've always done it that way and that's always been that person or that role responsibility doesn't mean it always has to remain that way.
I think that in one of I changed hats a couple of times in my career here at David Douglas. And in one of those years, I had the great opportunity of being a co-principal at an elementary school. And that it was the hardest job that I've ever done. I have taught elementary classrooms from kindergarten to fifth grade. I've done grant writing. I do professional development right now. I coordinate a program. But when you're a building principal, you're at the forefront of not only operating a building, but you're looked at to be an instructional leader. And when you're at an elementary school, you've got to know what the teachers are teaching in reading, writing, science, math, health, what they're doing with their behavior programs, the whole gamut of what goes on with curriculum on a day-to-day basis. But yet, when you're in the building, you've got a parent calling you, you've got your secretary asking you for something that district office wants. And I think that we lose sight of sometimes in our systems that there are key people in there that could help with some of those instructional practices. And if we were more collaborative, a principal can't always be the person that knows everything about every subject or every instructional strategy. But yet there are teachers, 20 some odd teachers, 30 some odd teachers. At a high school, you've got hundreds of teachers who, if you tapped in to their skill and their knowledge base and had that spread within a department or within a building, then you're building capacity within your own system or your own building. And then people aren't getting tapped out or overused. And so it's more about what are the resources that we already have within our schools that we're not tapping into so that we can build capacity to spread the knowledge and the skills that we already have right there in front of us?
Well, I agree with that. It says if your recommendation suggests to policymakers that we should do more, and I'm trying to come up with what that would look like. Should there be, should each building have a designated field sergeant, mentor, that we should set up a new title, something like that. It feels like that's kind of a district, local issue, but maybe not. But it's a very interesting concept, and I appreciate you for bringing that forward. Mm-hmm. We're the Education Committee. We don't yet, we hear a lot from lobbyists and experts. We don't always get teachers, so appreciate you coming forward. Any other questions, Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure on that concept, Ms. Chair. We need to do it. We just need to allow it to happen. When I was in middle school, which was a long, long time ago, there was a lot of team teaching going on, and which was incredibly collaborative and worked incredibly well. I mean, you'd do as a big group for a couple of days a week and then break out, and that sort of concept's been out there for a long time. So I think if allowed, this sort of activity could grow organically, and that'd probably be the best way to do it. My question, Mr. Chair, is you talked about continuing next year. Do you have an idea of where you want to go as far as what you want to look at for further recommendations?
We had a very long list last summer. Okay. That tackled everything from talking about school calendar and how it's arranged, in the traditional model, to roles of how we work with teachers, from mentoring all the way to technology. I mean, we had a long list, and I feel like we just got an email a couple of weeks ago from our council leader, and I feel like they probably get even a longer laundry list. And so it's going to be one of those things where we throw a lot of things on the wall again and, try to whittle it down to things we can really focus on, because there's just too much to tackle at one time.
Hey, Ms. Chair, if I could make one suggestion, you might want to look at if so many things weren't mandated by the state and federal government and you didn't spend so much time teaching the test, that you might actually be able to allow teachers flexibility to actually teach. Maybe that might be a concept you might want to look at.
Hear, hear.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you do continue on, because I think the process of continuing on helps each of you grow more. And I had a lot of experiences when I was as a high school principal and a math teacher that allowed me to meet with other people and to work. I guess the biggest issue that I've always had as a principal and others is finding the time that doesn't take away from the best teacher being out of the classroom to go study, because kids need their teacher. They need that consistency. And although some of my favorite people are those that are willing to come in and be substitutes and do that kind of work, the reality is the same thing doesn't happen in the classroom if the person who is really the gifted teacher isn't there. And so I hope you would continue to wrestle with ways in which we can find ways to do staff development and mentoring and teaching without depriving kids Yep. of those people in the classroom. And, you know, whether that's an extended year where you have time spread out differently, I don't know exactly what it is. We tried a lot of different things when I was a principal, and I hope that's a conversation that continues to go, because if there was one thing that consistently came up from my teachers was, oh, that was a great workshop, and it was a great program that we're trying to implement. But the time it takes away from my classroom is not allowing me to get my kids where I want them to be. And so my best teachers would oftentimes say, look, I just can't invest that time in it because I have to invest it in the kids. And so finding a way to organize our schools in ways in which the kids don't pay the price when the teachers are doing the stuff, but also making sure that the teachers have the time to do it, I think is really important. And, you know, we did some unique things because we were fortunate in our school at different times. And the best one that ever worked was a program that had to do with the cultural competency. It was we couched it a different way. But we took a fleet of substitutes who we knew were going to be regularly coming, and they would come in and spend a day. And each period, a group of eight different teachers went to another teacher who taught them. And then the next period, another eight came. And those eight people in a large high school were people who they didn't even see. I mean, we were in different buildings. And so they were building their own connections within themselves, and that gave the teacher the experience to use their differences to show them that there were differences in their classroom. And we had an exceptional teacher that did it. And there wasn't a single teacher that didn't grow from that experience. And when you, as a principal, experiential leader, say, yes, the head football coach will also be there, everybody, and there's no excuse because it's during the day, and the amount of time it took was one period, once a week instead of whole days, and you had an exceptional teacher that was teaching it, who then had time on other days of the week when you weren't doing it to go to the classrooms and observe whether the techniques that we were practicing are being practiced. You know, all of those things are really important, as you know, if you really want to change a behavior. And so I hope you have conversations that get deeply into what does it mean to have staff development, and then how does that staff development across curriculum levels and all those other kind of things happen, because we get into picking a program and then spending a lot of time as a group working on it, but that doesn't help us become better math and better English and better science teachers. So it's an amazing thing, the complexity of what you guys are trying to do here, and I think many people don't have any concept of how important that is, and there's no industry out there that would spend less time than education does on keeping people up to speed with what they need to do. So I commend the efforts. I think it's a beginning place, and we need to figure out and have real conversations about how to move forward. Mostly a thank you for what you're doing, and encourage you to try to find those creative solutions that work to allow kids to get what they need, the teacher in the classroom, and teachers to get what they need, new knowledge and instruction techniques. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll let you get back to class.
Okay. He was very good. He went to every one of them.
Let's move forward here with our agenda. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 228. Give us a brief summary, Administrator Donovan.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Senate Bill 228 is concerned mostly with modifying the method for determining the amount of grants and aid for teacher and administrator mentorship programs, and it specifically removes a statutory reference to the price index. It does declare emergency, and it is effective on passage.
Okay, so I have Dan Jamison and Toya Fick. You guys want to come up together?
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, and members of the committee. It's good to be back before you again. For the record, my name is Dan Jamison. I am the Vice President of the Chalkboard Project.
And for the record, my name is Toya Fick. I'm the Government Affairs Director with Stanford Children, also a former middle school teacher.
I really appreciated the conversation you just had with our two distinguished educators, and it's a reminder to me that what we all know to be true, and that is the quality of the classroom teacher is the greatest impact within the school on student success. You also heard them talk about this notion of mentorship. What we would share that we know nationally is that we lose about 40% of our teachers in this country in the first 5 years of their career. Now, we were a little bit skeptical about that number, so we commissioned a study by ECO Northwest a couple of years ago, and what we learned is that those numbers are very similar in Oregon, and they come at great cost. The very conservative estimate by ECO Northwest is that it costs Oregonians about $40 million a year to turn the turnstile and go out, recruit, retain, hire, train, and develop those teachers that continue turning over. We are losing some of our best and our brightest. In addition to this notion about wanting to hang on to our teachers, we also know that we need to invest in them with supports and structures that make a difference that will cause them to stay in the profession and not just stay there, but to improve their practice. Now, we've had a successful run in the first few years with the Oregon Mentor Program. We are very pleased with the findings that we have. And we've asked the question, what is the impact of these mentored teachers in the Oregon Mentor Program that we have? There was another study that was commissioned with ECO Northwest. And what we have found in our results in four districts with mentors that were in a full-fledged, fully supported mentor program, that the students in their classrooms, both in math and in reading, had gains academically greater than students across the rest of the state. And we think that's a great reflection of the investment that we want to make. We are here today in support of this legislation with 228 because we believe that there is a need for a technical fix. As we talked to our colleagues in the field, specifically representatives of COSA, had another conversation with the superintendent this morning, they want to see greater flexibility in the administration of the funds. And as we've had conversation with leaders from the Department of Education, very collaboratively, and specifically I'm referring to Cindy Hunt, also Assistant Superintendent Heidi Seib, they indicate to us that the language around the COLA that is written into the cost of living increase, CPI, forgive me for that error, the CPI language is very prescriptive, and it does not allow for that flexibility that our colleagues in the field want to see. That is the fix that we are proposing for you. We believe that it does need to be addressed, and we have worked collaboratively with the department to propose that to you. Now, in addition, we also want you to know that the program otherwise would remain the same. It allows the department to offer grants to districts with greater flexibility and, we believe, reaching more educators. Now, with that point, I also want to highlight another value that we have, and I'm certain that all of you hold that as well as we, and that is the notion we don't want to see the mentorship program watered down. This is not an argument to disperse dollars so widely that we end up with a program that is not as powerful or effective as it is. But we do know that the $5,000 per pupil is not necessarily a prescription that applies to every single district, every single grant application, and they've indicated to us that they can and they should have more flexibility. I also want to take note of just a few numbers that are important. As we look at the demographics of our workforce in Oregon, we know, we project based upon the numbers that we have, that within the next 7 years, between now and 2020, we fully expect to have 33% new teachers and new leaders in the state. Now, even as we're undergoing tough times financially, we know that we need to have the structures in place that will allow us to invest wisely in these professionals that we know make the biggest impact with our kids. I also want to quote from a recent letter that was submitted to the Oregon Coalition for Quality Teaching and Learning. This was carried by Dr. Hilda Roselli, and it was written by Dr. Rudy Crew. And I'd like to quote, "Statewide agreement on hiring and induction practices to support and not penalize new teachers and administrators during their first 2 years of employment in the profession." These are one of the seven charges that he made to the coalition. That's in alignment with the goal. That's in alignment with what we know to be best practice in this state. And that's why we're here supporting this fix to this particular bill. Maria?
Perfect. So on behalf of Stanford Children members throughout the state, I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 228. I'd like to spend my time this afternoon talking about the need for new educators to have mentors, and I hope to do that through sharing my experience as a new teacher in Louisiana about a decade ago. So I began teaching in Louisiana in the fall of 2003, and unfortunately for me and my students, the state provided a mentor for all new teachers in the state. Even 10 years ago, they did that. I definitely needed one, largely because I was assigned to teach in a school that was in the bottom 10 performing schools in the whole state. So of the 1,600 schools in the state of Louisiana, my school was in the bottom 10 for student achievement. So I definitely needed all of the support I could get. Luckily, I had a great mentor my first 2 years. She had 20 years of experience in the classroom, and I learned countless techniques from her, from differentiating instruction to managing classroom behavior, which, as you can imagine, is a huge issue in a school that doesn't perform so well, and to engaging my parents and the guardians of my kids, which was a huge difference in, you know, how well I got my kids to behave in class, and that was all largely thanks to her. It was amazing also to have her feedback weekly when she came into my classroom. She'd come in, she'd sit in the back of the room, she'd take notes, and at the end of the school day, we'd spend time talking about what I did, you know, well, what I didn't do so well, and, you know, what I could do differently for tomorrow, and that made a huge difference. I think you just heard about how difficult it is to be a principal, and largely, you know, they don't have time to come in to evaluate how you're doing or give you feedback all the time, so this feedback is absolutely important. I also had time during the day to observe her at least once a week, and I would just go in, do the same thing, and just steal everything she did and take it back to my classroom the next day. I know that I could not have been nearly as effective without having that effective mentor in my life for the first 2 years, and my kids would have suffered without her support. Unfortunately, the number of new educators in the state outnumber the funds available to provide each of them with mentors. Currently, over half of the new teachers in the state do not receive mentors, even though this program exists. And without those mentors, they're kind of left to sink or swim on their own. In these challenging times, larger class sizes, we get Common Core coming down the pike, our new teachers and principals need a lot of support moving forward. As Dan said, SB 228 just removes language that requires an automatic increase in per grantee amount. We think this language is unnecessary because there's already a cap in the statute, and it would hamper ODE's ability to efficiently and flexibly implement the program. So if they're allowed to make these changes and allowed to take these considerations, they could provide more mentors to more new teachers. And like I said, this is absolutely needed. So we absolutely support this legislation. I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
It looks like the bottom line here is without this guaranteed growth, you'll have more money to serve more teachers. Is that?
That's right. That's the bottom line.
Just with this?
Yep. That's it.
Questions? The Department of Education is willing to come up and give us thumbs up, but we've communicated that they're supportive of this technical change.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So.
And I think
Principal Rollman.
Thank you.
I promise that's the last time I'll do it.
No problem.
Probably not.
Thank you. I think also the teachers that came up before just said we didn't get in it for the money, and I think that's very true of teachers. I think they have it is in part a calling, and it is in part a whole lot of other things that make really great teachers and principals. And what the mentor program does is it says that we care enough that we're going to do some things, because the mentor teachers probably put more money into the mentoring than they receive from the program, because if they see the teacher needing something, they will go get it. I mean, that's what we do. It's what happens in all of our classrooms. And the same is true with the teacher. But having the ability to buy some time to be together and to do some of these other things is really important. And I think schools will figure out how to spend the money effectively, and we don't need to burden them with some other things. So I commend the idea and the conversation. This was hard fought to get into our statutes, and I want to make sure that we continue to support mentoring, because I think it does more than just about anything else early on in a person's career for the kids as well as the teachers.
Yeah. And was alluded to that this is when you lose a teacher after 5 years.
Yeah.
Awesome. There's a lot of investment there. So
That hasn't changed. That rate of losing people. It's been about the same since the 1950s. It's pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult profession, and there are people who find out in those first 3 or 4 years that it wasn't something they could commit to, and therefore mm-hmm. they leave. And I wish we had a better way of finding that out before we invested the money, but to this point, we haven't figured that out.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Chair Haas and committee members.
Well, committee, are we ready for our first vote?
Yep.
Let me open up a work session on Senate Bill 228. Senator Knope.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 228 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 228 out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Rober.
Does this have a its own? It wouldn't have its own. This hasn't changed anything. Okay, then I'm good.
Further discussion? Objections? Seeing none, Senate Bill 228 passes with a due pass recommendation to the floor of the Oregon State Senate, and I will carry this bill.
Oh, sure. Take the good ones.
Going, watch here. We're going right down the list. Okay, so
freshmen have decided to hate.
Yeah.
I'll close that work session and open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 271. Administrator Donovan, could you give us a brief summary?
Sure. Senator Haas, Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you. Senate Bill 271 abolishes the Oregon Educator Professional Development Commission. This commission's been in existence for a few years now. It transfers the responsibility of that commission, the professional development responsibilities, as well as the property and relevant records, to the Superintendent of Public Instruction. And it requires that the Oregon Department of Education continue the Educator Professional Development Program, and it broadens the scope of that program. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
And has a referral, as you'll see in your notes, to the Ways and Means Committee because of the funds that are involved here. And so let's bring up Dan Jamieson again, along with Mary Cadez, and we'll keep the Department of Education on standby.
Okay. There you are. Well, Chair Haas and committee members, again, for the record, my name is Dan Jamieson with the Chalkboard Project, and this is?
I'm Mary Cadiz. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Salem-Keizer Schools.
I think the second topic that was spoken to by the distinguished educators that met with you before is around professional development. Now, we see very strong alignment with that concept and with the need for delivery with the recommendations from Dr. Crewe, with the recent paper by Dr. Hilda Roselli. We also see it with all the recommendations in national research. We're seeing a greater need for centralized professional development that guarantees standards and aligns delivery with rigor throughout the state. The Professional Development Clearinghouse is not a new concept. The legislature created the Clearinghouse in 2009, and it established the Oregon Educator Professional Development Commission. This was a large commission with good intention, and I think as I listened to the firsthand accounts of members who were there, it was a little bit unwieldy. They also ran out of money. They attempted to maintain the commission with private dollars, and quite frankly, we believe that the work fizzled. That is not an excuse for us to walk away from what we know is an urgent demand in the state. Whether we consider Common Core standards, the rollout of Senate Bill 290 and rigorous performance evaluation, or the advent that coming in the next couple of years with smarter balanced assessments, we know that there is a need for rigorous, uniform delivery of professional development with fidelity in this state. These are urgent emerging demands, and we need to make sure that we have some type of oversight. Within the state of Oregon, we expend about $100 million a year in 197 school districts on professional development. This particular request is for $500,000, in the Oregon Department of Education to oversee professional development. Now, I want to speak with you very candidly, committee members, just based upon my personal experience. And Senator Roblin, with your experience in public schools, I know that you feel the same. We see a new level of energy. We see a new level of talent. We see a new level of direction within the Oregon Department of Education that we are very heartened by and encouraged by. Our recommendation to move professional development back into the department is a reflection of our confidence in their staff and the direction that they are taking. This notion of recommending $500,000 with federal funds is not taken at random, and I want to share with you a little bit of the rationale for that. We were recently returned from a trip to Washington, D.C., where we met with leaders in the House, leaders in the Senate, both on the Republican and the Democrat side, key staffers, as well as members from Secretary Duncan's staff in the Department of Education. It is very clear to us that reauthorization of ESEA, when it comes with title dollars, is going to be far more focused on educator effectiveness and professional development supports, and that will be the expectation for the states. So we know that we're moving in that direction with federal dollars, and that's why we placed a marker here. Now, with that being said, we also want to share with you, as this bill, if it moves to Ways and Means, we will be there collaboratively with the Department of Education to work with whatever funding source or solution will be most appropriate. Regardless of where that comes from, we know that we need to have a state investment, and our strong recommendation is that be housed with the Oregon Department of Education. Now, with that being said, this leader on my left is perhaps one of the best architects I know in the state of Oregon of creating and sustaining an architecture, a structured support of professional development, mentorship, educator effectiveness in the state. Mary in the Salem School District has not only helped develop this for all professionals in her district, they also have the student achievement results to show for it, and they are showing success in closing the achievement gap as well. We thought it would be appropriate for her to talk about how the professional development looks on the ground and why this is so important. Mary.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, after 6 years of working diligently on professional development and knowing that staff quality is key to our work in closing the achievement gap, we know that there are some factors that are critical to our success, and we believe the success of our sister districts here in Oregon. And we know that professional development that improves teaching and learning in our district has to have these characteristics. It has to be the result of purposeful planning. We have to align it to our district's strategic plan and to the identified needs. That way, it's meaningful to our teachers and it has utilitarian value. In other words, they can implement it right out of the box. It has to be accessible to them. This is really, really important. In a district like Salem, we have a lot of movement, people going on leave. We have to make sure that the new teacher coming in to replace the exiting teacher has the same skill set and toolbox that their predecessor had. We have to have it be dynamic. It has to be able to be altered or changed based on their feedback. And we have to make it available to staff on demand. And we're using some technology tools right now to make that happen by being able to put model lessons on teachers' desktops. We also know that it needs to be delivered by our instructional coaches and administrators who we train together in order to get the kind of consistency, use of common language, and to produce constructive feedback that ensures fidelity to that program, model, or strategy, whatever we're trying to implement. We know that it needs to be embedded in classroom practice. Here our coaches play a critical role. It has to be practiced in the classroom so that implementation is not left to chance. In other words, if a teacher finds that it's difficult, they don't just give up on it. They have someone there to help and support them, move them along. It requires support by coaches and mentors, and you've just heard about mentors. I might just add one statistic to the information that was presented on mentors. When I entered Salem District, we had a 39% exit rate within the first 5 years. Since we've put in the mentor program, that exit rate's about 10%. So we've taken it down considerably. it's important that professional development be planned so that teachers have time to observe each other in practice and time to debrief in order to gain new skills and to further refine their practice. It also must be differentiated. Teachers must be recognized as learners in a learning community and need to have their adult learning needs met. Mid-career teachers' needs may be much different than a beginning teacher's needs, and we have to be respectful of that. Another very, very key factor is that it has to be networked and shared across like schools and or districts to increase the return on our investment and to expand the skills and knowledge that our teachers have. It also needs to be oriented to the future. We have to think ahead. We have to look at what's happening with our students and what we're preparing them for in order to develop the internal professional capacity that we need to meet the demands of the district and our students. One of the things that we believe, and this is the preamble to our collaborative work that we do with our university partners in Salem-Keizer, is that teachers develop over the continuum of their career. It's not a one-shot deal. Even a teacher at the end of their career needs refreshment and reinduction efforts made in their behalf. We also know that most of the smaller districts throughout the state may not have the capacity that we have as a larger district to deliver job-embedded coaching on their own. But if we can bring people and resources together through a statewide network such as that proposed in Senate Bill 271, we can ensure that the network is aligned with Common Core standards. We will better serve our teachers and our students in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe you could help me with something here. And
sure.
We see these terms, professional development and mentoring.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple of times today earlier from the teachers where people have alluded to some of these workshops were a waste of money. And while everybody, I think, agrees that the mentoring is important, we certainly don't want to overspend on this. And
sure.
We're getting rid of this commission because it's cumbersome. And, where will the bulk of mentoring programs come from? Was it in the bill that we discussed earlier, or how will this work? It does feel like it's cumbersome and coming from different directions, and there's double meaning.
Yeah.
We've got different words. For those of us not in the profession, I think you could give us a little mentorship 101 on how Oregon will, we hope, spend its money down the road on this important program. But because education at every level is underfunded, we don't want to overspend here and do what one of your teachers discussed was kind of a waste in some of those workshops in previous years.
Do you want me to take? I'll take a run at that, Senator Hass, and then Mary, feel free to add. I'd like to draw a distinction between the first and second year educators and the investment in very targeted, specific training for them that is distinct from professional development for all educators in the system.
Okay.
So as you heard Mary discuss this, the targeted specific mentorship program that they have in Salem is based upon a new teacher center model that is very well researched, and as you heard also, very high results in upping the retention rate and elevating the level of effectiveness. The other example I would give you, Chair Hess, if I may, yesterday we had a conversation at OEA, and gathered around the table were three or four representatives from OEA, three or four representatives from Chalkboard. We had, I think, two representatives from ODE, and we also had a representative from COSA. We were brainstorming how we deliver statewide professional development for all educators to meet the new needs established in the Performance Evaluation Law, Senate Bill 290. That's a shared, aligned, uniform delivery of professional development where we have to have guarantees around fidelity and consistency for all educators, and we need to make it accessible for all regardless of where they are and their understanding of the law. And as you can imagine, sir, there's great urgency around that. It is that broader delivery of professional development that we see a need for uniform guidance and oversight by the Department of Education. I hope that, does that help, sir?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Superintendent.
Mary?
Well, our first-year teachers, our beginning teachers, whether they're new to teaching or new to the district, require some mentor support, and so we are able to do that through the mentoring program. The embedded
through what mentoring program?
The mentoring program through the grant through the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. The one we just modified in
the one you just modified. Okay. Yes. Yep.
So that's where that comes from.
Yep. We have 6 full release teachers who are on assignment as mentors, who've been trained in the new teacher center model, who work very, very closely with 110 or 120 brand new teachers to Salem-Keizer.
Okay, then where did this, the commission that we're abolishing here, where was that pot of money, how was that distributed? And was it done at all in concert with the ODE fund?
No, I do not believe that it was, Senator Haas, and I may need to get back to you with specifics about that. I don't have that answer for you here today.
Mm-hmm. Senator Roblin?
In the commission, our goal was at the time, if I believe this right, was that there was a whole lot of information about a lot of different programs that was out there all over the country. And we brought together a group, and I believe on this one I served, actually. And our goal was to make a portal, basically, of information that we had checked. And Shockport had done a lot of stuff on trying to find out what programs out there were truly best practice, and what they had found was there wasn't a lot of really best practice, because it's hard to experiment on children and do best practice kinds of things. So they took the best of the best practice, and we were trying to find a place where a commission could come together and put together on a website information that would lead school districts and others one place they could go to find out all the kind of stuff that was out there and what information about them made it worthwhile. This is one that we as a group of teachers at this district would like to invest in. And we at the beginning of it, we hired groups to develop the portal and do all the other kind of stuff, and it was going along pretty well. Most of the money came from private investment, actually. I don't know that we got much state money to begin with. There might have been a little bit of seed money. But it did tend to kind of slip away. And I've always believed that this is something better suited for the Department of Ed. So, and I think there are people there who feel very strongly that it's something that they can now handle and maybe work to have the staff. We know the federal government is coming that direction. But having knowing where stuff is and how to go about accessing it is really important for school districts, because you have to have a whole person trying to figure out what's out there, especially when it comes to a particular kind of need. You have a teacher who acknowledges, or a group of teachers that acknowledge, that math and the standards in math are really difficult at whatever level, and they would like to have some staff development on it. Where do you go to find that? And it used to be we had specialists in the State Department when we used to have a more robust State Department of Education, because the funding was there, and those people were where we went to. And then that kind of went away, and so we were in a need to find those things, and that's, I believe, the genesis of this particular commission.
Yeah. Well, we've heard that, you know, some of the workshops in the past weren't effective or productive, and now this commission has, you know, lost its way. So, as important as this is, I hope that it can be managed better.
Yes.
And I will leave it at that. Any further questions? We're in a work session, Senator Canope. We're abolishing a commission and streamlining government here. Are you down with that?
Well, I wasn't sure I'd ever hear you say those words, so that's awesome.
We're in a work session.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 271 to be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation, and the bill will be referred to Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Canope moves to report SB 271 out of committee with a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Objections? So ordered.
Thank you.
Okay, close public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 271, and we will move into a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 104. Administrator Donovan.
Chair Haas, Senator, members of the committee, thank you very much. Senate Bill 104 It allows the Department of Education to require fingerprints of a person who is a community college faculty member on providing instruction as part of early childhood programs or early childhood education programs. Currently, the Oregon Revised Statute 326.603 generally requires state or national criminal background checks for all education personnel who are not licensed otherwise. But that language is limited to, at the community college level, community college faculty providing instruction at a kindergarten through grade 12 level. This Senate bill declares an emergency is effective July 1st, 2013.
Okay. Jan McCone from the Department of Education.
Your assistant is handing out both my testimony for this bill and just some context for the last bill in case you had any questions.
Okay. Were we close?
Close.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't exactly right, and I know. That's good. It's good the way it's going where it's going.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jan McComb, Legislative Director for the Oregon Department of Education. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 104. It's one of the Department of Education's bills. Student safety has been a priority for the legislature and the department. Senate Bill 104 increases that safety by expanding who in a school is subject to a state and national criminal background check. As you likely remember, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission conducts criminal background checks on all licensed personnel, teachers, administrators, nurses, personnel specialists. The Oregon Department of Education conducts criminal background checks on non-licensed personnel, the office staff, bus drivers, custodial staff, contractors, and so on. Not too long ago, the legislature added community college faculty members who teach in a K-12 setting to those who must undergo a criminal background check. Senate Bill 104 will add community college faculty members who provide instruction as part of an early childhood education program, such as Oregon Head Start. Many community colleges offer degrees and certificates in early childhood education. The community college students participate in practicums that take them into early childhood education classrooms. The students are background checked, but their teachers who come into the classroom to observe their students teaching are not. Senate Bill 104 closes this loophole and better ensures the safety of Oregon's youngest students by ensuring that all the staff members have undergone a background check. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
You know, having gone through so many of these different finding these other groups, when did we realize this group was one that was not there? I mean, I'm surprised that we didn't with early childhood, because ESDs have been working with early childhood for a long time, so that's interesting.
Senator Haas and Senator Roblin, if they are registered with the Child Care Division, they are already covered in getting those background checks.
Okay.
And the student teachers are getting background checks. So this is really just closing up a little hole that's there.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, we have no one else signed up to testify for this or against it. Seems like a really minor technical issue. We're in work session. Senator Knope, we're closing loopholes. Are you done with that?
Oh, I'm good. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 104. Be reported out of committee with due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves that Senate Bill 104 be reported out of the committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
We're just working the heck out of him today.
Yes, I am. Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 104 moves to the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator Knope, would you carry this bill?
I will.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 104 and open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 193. Administrator Donovan.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you very much. Senate Bill 193 requires school transportation providers to have in-house drug and alcohol testing, to participate in in-house drug and alcohol testing programs or be members of a consortium or other group that provides that testing, and it adds a definition for school transportation provider.
Yeah, I would know.
Okay, there's Mr. T.J. Crockett and Jan, why don't you come up as well?
That's true.
Yeah, they were.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Chairman Haas, members of the State Committee on Education and Workforce Development. For the record, my name is T.J. Crockett, and I am a program analyst in the Pupil Transportation Section of the Department of Ed. I'm here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 193. This bill was brought forward by the department. For background, all commercial drivers are required to participate in a drug and alcohol testing program, which is outlined in federal rule. School bus drivers as CDL holders also fit within these parameters. As required by the federal rule, all drug tests that are done are verified by a medical review officer who shares his findings with employers. But under current law, the medical review officer also is required to report positive drug tests for CDL drivers of motor carriers to the Department of Transportation following procedures outlined by the Department of Transportation. That positive drug test may appear on a driving record. Recently, a medical review officer refused to report a positive drug test to the Department of Transportation that was for a school bus driver. They cited an exception that exists in the motor carrier statutes that exempt school buses, and they believe that by extension that also exempted school bus drivers from these requirements. What we're doing with Senate Bill 193 is clarifying that positive tests for school bus drivers should also be reported to the Department of Transportation as they are for CDL drivers of motor carriers. We have worked closely with ODOT to get this passed, so you'll notice that there's already been an amendment made where we clarify that the Department of Ed will be watching and enforcing and regulating the school bus side. ODOT, of course, will continue to observe and enforce the motor carrier side. As I mentioned earlier, school bus drivers and districts, contractors are already mandated by the federal government to participate in this program. We're just trying to close the communication loophole with the positive drug test, so there shouldn't be a financial impact to any district in the state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jan? For the record, Jan McComb, and I have nothing more to add. I think TJ has covered everything.
But this was discovered after that one incident?
Yes, Chairman Haas, it did come to light. We rely on the employer to tell us now, and we, as the department, do have the ability to take away a school bus driver's ability to drive simply a school bus. It doesn't prevent them from going to a motor carrier or another CDL job and basically being dishonest with their new employer. It came to light to us because an MRO didn't report it, and the employer also didn't report it until after that school bus driver had gotten employment with another school bus agency. And then it was brought to light, and then we were able to deal with it. But with this statute requiring not only the MRO, the medical review officer, to report it to Department of Transportation, but to us, we can ensure that they go through their return to service duty requirements. Simply having a positive drug test doesn't prohibit you from driving a commercial motor vehicle, but there are you have to see a substance abuse professional, and you're subject to additional tests. There's some safeguards in place, essentially.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, I was initially excited about this because I like the concept of drug testing, but I noticed the relating clause is pretty narrow. So we'll just let it go at where it is.
Questions? Further questions? The amendment then further clarifies?
The amendment brought forth, when we wrote the original draft, we took language that exists currently in ORS Chapter 825, which is the Motor Carrier Division, and that section mandates DMV to verify that motor carriers comply with the statute. Because school buses and their drivers by statute fall under Department of Ed, we changed that paragraph to basically outline they will certify annually to Department of Ed that they meet these requirements as school bus operators.
Okay. We do not have the necessary fiscal document here to pass this bill out of committee today. Do you anticipate any more amendment cleanup?
No, we do not.
Okay. So, committee, we could adopt this amendment today to the bill, or wait until when we carry it over at the next meeting.
Might as well put it in now.
We can do the amendment and then wait for the paperwork.
Right. So.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
It helps force the paperwork.
Yeah. We're in a work session.
Chair Haas, I move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 193 be adopted.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 193. Discussion? Objections? So ordered. And I will close a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 193, and we will carry this over to a future hearing.
I suggest, Ms. Chair, you carry it over till your next committee meeting. That will should energize the people to get the paperwork in.
I'm trying to maintain good relations with those people.
Well, but okay.
Thank you, committee. There was some actual action here.
Yeah, thank you.
Although it's quality, not quantity. Thank you all. If there's no other business before this committee, we will adjourn.